this guy was somehow involved with Pope John Paul and bank fraud? I mean, what is that all about?
The thing is about Rikers, it's surrounded by treacherous waters. How did he escape from Rikers in the first place?
And he is essentially an international hitman.
The BioBack is a therapeutic medical-grade back brace that provides a drug-free solution for lower back pain. BioBack was specifically designed to improve posture and enhance mobility. BioBack used to only be available with a doctor's prescription, and it cost hundreds of dollars. It's been ordered by thousands of doctors for their patients. Doctors and back pain sufferers alike appreciate BioBack's small size and lightweight design. BioBack's opposing forces are combined with a lumbar dome, which fits in the small of your back, to immediately reduce tension, provide relief, and help improve posture and mobility. Most people feel instant relief while performing almost any activity, and BioBack can also help prevent low back pain when worn proactively during activities known to cause back pain. My biggest problem is I slouch whenever I sit for a long time. I'm wearing mine right now, and I have much better posture, and I no longer feel back pain. BioBack is now available without a prescription for just $99.95 with 100% money-back guarantee. Visit BioBack.com to order. Best case, worst case listeners can save 10% with promo code BESTCASE. BioBack.com, promo code BESTCASE.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Francie Hakes. I'm a former state and federal prosecutor. It's great to be back with another week of Best Case, Worst Case. Jim, I am so excited. We have one of our favorite guests. I have to say, one of our top, well... If I actually give you a number, Fitz, our other top guest might be jealous. So I guess I better not. But everyone knows that you are one of our top guests. And I'm so excited to bring him back again. And he is?
James R. Fitzgerald, a.k.a. Fitz, Jim Fitz, anything like that. Great to be back with you guys. And you are two of my favorite podcast interviewers. I won't say the best because the other podcast interviewers may get jealous. But you two at the very top.
I'm wounded. I'm wounded. Jim and I always like to think we're the best.
Okay.
But Fitz, you know, we've heard from a lot of our best case, worst case listeners that you're one of their, if not their top favorite guests. Lots of them says, more Fitz, bring back more Fitz. So of course, we're bringing you back. But some of our newer listeners might not know your background. So I wanted to tell our new listeners and remind our current listeners of some of the sort of top hits of the career and the case files of Jim Fitz Fitzgerald. For example, Fitz, I bet a lot of people that listen to Best Case, Worst Case don't know how you started your career. Because it wasn't with the FBI, was it?
No, it wasn't. And we won't go too much into this, but my first real job after college was as a store detective at a large downtown department store in Philadelphia. And I still say to this day, I probably put my life on the line chasing kids with record albums and leather jackets down Market Street or up Broad Street. You know, they turn around, pull a knife on me. Whoa, I'm only a store detective, not a cop. So 14 months later, I went to the Ben Salem Police Department. That's suburban Philly, about 100 sworn officers. And that's where the case will come from today. And then 1987, decided time for a change and went to the FBI, met Jim Clemente. Hi, Jim. First day at the academy in November of 87. We went through that for, 16 weeks back then. And then off to New York together, 7 years there. Then I got promoted as a supervisory special agent to Quantico and the FBI Academy for 12 more weeks of training to be a behavioral specialist, a profiler. And lo and behold, my first case as a profiler was one that became reduced to an acronym known as UNABOM for University Airline Bombings. And I came on at the 17-year point, and within 9 months, we had it solved. And no, it wasn't just me, but I was very proud to head up the language analysis aspect of that case. And it was a great team effort in the long run. Ted Kaczynski, of course, is off in jail for life. But then other homicide cases, rape cases, serial offenders and all, Of course, 9/11 attacks, DC sniper, anthrax are just some of the more high profile cases I've worked and played a direct role in. And so, yeah, I'm still active as a consultant. I've written a few books, A Journey to the Center of the Mind. And every once in a while, I do a podcast with my good friends.
And you also do some consulting for TV projects. I mean, of course, everyone has seen Manhunt Unabomber, I think.
Yes, which is an 8-part miniseries based on the my role in the Unabom case. Sam Worthington portrayed me. And of course, I was a tech advisor for Criminal Minds when I first retired. Then Jim retired. We had a handshake agreement. He took over there, but I helped him along the way. I helped create season 9 and 10 character Alex Blake. She was an amalgam of me and my fiance Natalie Schilling, who's the Georgetown professor and forensic linguist. I helped solve the Unabom case and a forensic linguist. So if you watch any of those early series, that was the Alex Blake character. So played by Gene Triplehorn. So yeah, and a few other shows, Killer Profiles we did in there. So yeah, it's bizarre to have, my 31 years in law enforcement, hardly ever, thinking of TV or movies except just watching them like anyone else and enjoying them. And now I certainly have at least about half a foot in the door of the entertainment business to one degree or another.
We started our film career together in the FBI Academy, didn't we?
We have to put that, Jim, and you have the tech people. You have the DVD. We got to put that on YouTube or somewhere.
Oh,
we may have to get permissions and rights signed off by all the actors in it who are actually now FBI agents or retired FBI agents.
I think we're going to call that bonus content, right, Jim? We're going to call that bonus content and try to pursue it.
Yeah, I think so. There you go. Well, it's great to have you back again, Fitz. Always great seeing you. And you've been part of my FBI career since day one. So it's always great to continue that joint venture.
Well, likewise, and we're also good friends too, very good friends, I like to say. So on a personal level also, and we trust each other implicitly. We don't always agree on everything all the time, but we'd be pretty boring if we were just carbon copies of each other.
My God, I did not expect this to be such a love fest. So let's get into it now, Fitz. You're here to talk about a case. You've already teased it that it's when you were a police officer. I think it's so incredible that people have these multiple careers. I would have to say, you've got like 4, 5, if you count store detective, police officer, FBI agent, author, and now other entertainment, TV, podcasts, radio.
Wait, Francie.
What? Oh, did I skip something?
When he was 6, he was the neighborhood cop, finding stolen bicycles.
Wow.
What? Fitz, you didn't talk about that.
Well. That's directly from book one, everybody, A Journey to the Center of the Mind. Thank you, Jim.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, let's go a little bit past my 6-year-old stolen bike investigation. People can
today, anyway.
That later.
Today.
We can come back to that. But yeah, I do want to take us into the Wayback Machine from an old cartoon show to June of 1982. And I was going through my old, my second book for a few reasons and saw this case. I never really talked about this with anyone, except I did last year in August of 19 on a Tucker Carlson show on Fox News. And it has a tangential connection to the Jeffrey Epstein case.
Wow.
And at least his suicide in the MCC. So we're going to come back to that. But first, let's walk through this case. And I was kind of just a bystander in this, but it just how it played out was very interesting. And that is, I'm sitting at my desk in, as a new detective sergeant in June of 1982. And the chief comes in around 6:30. Fitzgerald, glad to see you're working. His name's Rich Viola. He was a very interesting guy. He was a former Philly police sergeant. He came in to be our chief. He was later fired, then brought back. And we hired Banner Planes to bring him back. A very interesting guy. He now lives in the Middle East. He's quite a character if you read in my second book.
Wait. Is that 6:30? A.M. or 6:30 p.m.?
Yes.
Good question.
6:30 p.m. And I'm glad you mentioned that. And he said, hey, we got something going down, Fitz. Call some of the boys in. We need about a half a dozen and I'll fill you in a few minutes. OK, so I call another detective or two in, get some plain clothes. No uniform guys. We went plain clothes. OK, so sure enough, I have about a half a dozen guys. About an hour later, there's the chief with a guy with I see a U.S. Marshal's jacket. And I'm thinking, all right, what's going on here? And Rich Viola, the chief, knew all these other agencies in Philly when he was a cop there. And he says, all right, everybody stand around. We got an announcement to make. So some other U.S. Marshals came in, about a dozen of us total. Doors are closed. No one else was allowed in this CID room, criminal investigative and detectives room, division, actually, CID. And lo and behold, they hold up a big black and white mugshot, and it's of a guy named William Joseph Arrico. We find out right away his nickname is the Exterminator.
Oh, dear. That seems ominous.
Pretty sure he wasn't involved with insecticides and killing bugs and those type things.
Can you tell me how normal it is to, like, close down CID and say no uniforms? I mean, that seems all very cloak and dagger in a way that is unusual.
Well, number one, there were some political issues within the police department back then. But more importantly, they didn't want to spook this guy with the general operating plan that we were putting together. They didn't want any, you know, marked patrol cars in his apartment area where he was living. So that's the other reason there. But we also didn't want anything on the radio. Everything was radio silence. This guy was very sophisticated. Here, it turns out he's an escaped prisoner from Rikers Island.
So, Fritz, how did he escape from Rikers in the first place?
I don't have those details. I will tell you about his next escape, and I do have the details on that one. But I'm not sure if he went out a window, if he used a fake ID, or, you know, it was a mistake. I'm not sure, but he was out for a few years. They knew shortly after he escaped that he had escaped, and the question was now, how do they get him back into custody?
Right. But the thing is about Rikers, it's surrounded by treacherous waters. I mean, it's supposed to be almost like Alcatraz, you know, that it's very difficult to swim from because of the sort of raging rivers that surround it. But on the other hand, there are bridges and there are cars that go back and forth. Supposedly, they're very heavily surveilled. So I can't imagine how he could just slip through or walk away unless he was actually in one of the vehicles. That sounds like maybe he had outside help.
Yeah, very possibly. And, you know, getting the whole arrest scenario down that night, that wasn't our priority to find out exactly how he did escape from Rikers. We just wanted to make sure we took him down safely. He was involved in the murder of the chief of police of Sedonia, Italy.
Wow.
Over the years. And it all comes back to, as I learned later, the death of Pope John Paul I and the Vatican bank scandal from the late 70s, early 80s. But we knew none of this at this point, still in CID, awaiting our orders to go out. And he is essentially an international hitman.
Wow.
You said that this guy, who was effectively a hitman, was somehow involved with Pope John Paul and bank fraud? I mean, what is that all about?
Well, and it's John Paul I. Now, if you remember, and some fans may not have, some listeners may not have even been born at this time, but we had a pope for only 1 month back in August of 78 to September of 78, John Paul I, who mysteriously died in his sleep. And of course, the Vatican is essentially its own country, and they did their own autopsies, their own investigation. And to this day, there are a lot of people who question some of those issues of how he died.
Wow.
And then this guy is involved with taking out witnesses, meaning Arrico, the hitman. He's involved while still in Italy as the exterminator, taking out, along with his son, who was, it's nice he raised his son to be a fellow hitman.
Friends in the family.
And they killed this Giorgio Ambrosio, had been in the Hotel Splendido in Milan. And next thing you know, the murder takes place with an M11 machine gun, specially fitted with a silencer, and five P-38 revolvers. So these guys, they were hunting for big game when they decided to take out their targets.
And was that guy in the Hotel Splendido somehow tied to the one-month pope, John Paul I?
Yes, yes. He was a lawyer and banking liquidator involved in the Vatican bank scandal scenario. And our guy, Arrico, was given a $100,000 contract. This is in June of 79, basically just 3 years before we actually arrested him. $100,000 in 1979, you know, at least 1.5, if not double what it's ostensibly worth now. So this was a big hit. Somebody wanted this guy out of the way. The Italian mafia was involved in this whole thing. And again, that wasn't enough. So eventually the guy, he knew this Ambrosoli was talking to the chief of police of Milan, Italy, and that chief wound up getting killed too. And Enrico is also the prime suspect.
Wow.
So we put our vest on, our ballistic vest. We're getting our long rifles, our shotguns. We were all issued 357 Magnums revolvers back then, but that was one of the stronger handguns that people had. But we were told this guy had fully automatic weapons, and he's killed people in Europe. He's escaped from prison here. He's robbed bank. He's a suspect in other murders.
Wow.
So Fitz, so this guy is really dangerous. And when you're talking about arming up, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the kind of training you got. We've talked an awful lot about police officers and what they're given. So I'd like you to just talk about how much knowledge you had about the weaponry you had, but also why did they think the guy was in Pennsylvania? Because he'd escaped from Rikers Island, which for those, especially our international listeners, might not know, that's in New York City.
Yes. And again, good question, Francie. And it turns out that he had a stepdaughter that somehow the marshals knew her name from their record checking and their background checking on him. And they started doing a surveillance on her. And they asked our chief in private, don't get anyone else involved. And that was even me. And I got along really well with the chief. But back in April of 82, can you go through the Ben Salem Rescue Squad records and look for the name of this woman? She's like 24, 25, something like that. And it took the chief a while. He's personally, this is before computers, whatever, certainly in our department. And he did find this name and found where she was taken to a hospital for some injury or illness, whatever. But the bottom line is they had the apartment number and name where this guy was living. So the chief Viola then went to the marshals. They got their team put together. They've been searching for this guy for 2 years that he's been out. He's 46 years old, by the way. Again, William Rico. So we basically...
Hey, Fitz, how do you spell Rico? I'm definitely going to look it up and see if I can't for our listeners. Everybody should go to our Facebook page because we have lots of commentary on our best case, worst case Facebook page, and we often post things like fun photographs of Jim Clementi in the 70s and Fitz and all kinds of criminals.
Not sure I knew about the fun photographs, Francie. That's
Jim,
a little
let's just
bit
say,
outside of best case, worst case.
I just want to say two words. No, maybe it's three. 70s porn stash. That's all I'm going to say about that. Anyway, Fitz, so spell his last name so our listeners can look it up for themselves, or I can look it up when we're done and post it on Facebook.
Sure. Full name, William Joseph Arrico, A-R-I-C-O.
Great. Thanks. So, okay, so your chief is telling you all this. You're getting out your weapons. Tell me about what you were carrying.
Well, I had a 357 Magnum in my holster. I had my ballistic vest. I'm barely 29 at this point. And I like to be free to be able to run. Shotguns are great. Shoulder weapons, you know, MP5, something like that can be great for, you know, sort of a takedown situation. But I want to be able to put my weapon back in my holster and chase somebody down if I have to. So I was kind of that guy for this team. I was pretty limber and could move pretty quickly then. And not too bad now, actually. But believe it or not.
I know the feeling.
Self-praise is better than none, I know. Anyway, so we're lined up and we get over there. And of course, and Jim knows this very well, the last thing you ever want is to be in a crossfire with other officers. It could be the military too, of course, and the friendly fire, you know, situation they talk about. So we were very careful through our chief and me as a sergeant there. I was directing some people that when we took this guy down, we wouldn't be in each other's lines of sights, so to speak. So and apparently the marshals had been doing some surveillances on this guy already. And they knew that about 8:30 every night he came out and lighted up a cigar and smoked it. And it was a clear night. It was warm June and late spring. And sure enough, around 8:30, he comes out. We're all kind of either in bushes, we're sitting on benches.
Wait,
apartment complex.
Sorry, can we back up for just one step, Fitz?
Sure.
So you guys are in, last time we hear, you're in CID and you're getting your instructions. What's your, like, brief? What are you in charge of something? Are you supervising? What are you What's your role?
Yeah, the marshals are basically in charge of this. Chief Vio basically is co-in charge. And then I'm in charge of the men that, as a sergeant, I'm in charge of the men that we brought on board here. And we made sure we wanted nobody in uniform. Everybody, in fact, one guy was in uniform. He went home and got changed. We lived that close, some of us anyway. And so we went in one car, not to make it look too obvious, parked about three buildings away. This is a nice suburban apartment complex. There's really no crimes or very minor crimes that occur there, a car break-in sometimes or a burglary. But we knew we wanted to separate ourselves and go from there and park accordingly.
Do you wear like an armband to identify yourselves, or what do? So to make sure nobody, because you're not all working from the same agency, you don't necessarily all know each other.
That's a good question, Jim. And we did get to meet each other, look at each other. We didn't wear armbands, the Bensalem police officers, and the marshals certainly weren't wearing their jackets out there. I believe some of them were sitting in cars having them. So we just had facial recognition, 8:30 in mid-June in the East Mid-Atlantic states. It's still light out. So we were pretty sure who was the good guy. There's only really one bad guy here. And we were pretty sure he wasn't with anybody else except his stepdaughter. So that was the operating plan. And we basically surrounded this guy's door. We had people in chase cars. We assumed he would be armed, even going out lighting up for a cigar. And sure enough, at 8:30, the door opens. Here comes this guy, stands outside, walks a little bit away from his door.
So you're waiting outside of this international killer hitman's apartment where he's hiding out for 2 years after escaping from prison. What happens next? Fitz, we're so excited to have you come back on our next episode to finish this incredible story. But until then, we have some really big news that we're excited to share. There was some great news about XG and the brand new Paramount Plus, which CBS All Access is now renaming itself. And one of the shows they're talking about launching in the near future is Real Criminal Minds with XG Productions. And that will be a show hosted by yours truly and Joe Mantegna. And we will be talking about real cases that inspire episodes of Criminal Minds. And we are really excited about this news.
Yeah, Fitz, I mean, this is exciting news, don't you think? It's, you were talking about having been a tech advisor on Criminal Minds, and this has been in the works with XG Productions for a while. And for us to launch on Paramount Plus is going to be really exciting. Jim, I can just hear your Criminal Minds fans' heads exploding as they listen to this episode, knowing that while Criminal Minds might be sort of over, it's not really over. You get to go in depth and see the stories that inspired the show.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so happy to be working with Joe Mantegna on this. Everybody in the cast, crew, and production and writing staff called Joe a prince because he is such a wonderful man. I mean, he was truly the leader of the cast in every way and such a just a wonderful spirit and just so interesting as well as just congenial to work with.
Yeah, I've been on set with Joe a number of times, and I think each time I was there, he had someone from the military there to hang out at the set and, you know, do lunch, whatever. And he wouldn't like just ignore him. Hey, guys, all right, see you later. Thanks for coming by. He'd sit and have lunch with them, actually have conversations. A really friendly guy, professional, great actor, too. So congrats to XG. I'm glad to be an early member of the group. And I have a feeling I may be called again to do some work with this new show because I know I contributed some real cases. When I teach linguistics in my grad course, Jim, I still refer to the episode, I think it's called Gabby, where the word light bug is inserted. And that was a real case that I helped solve with that word. And you wrote it into that script. So congrats to you guys. And I'll be glad to help out any way I can.
Great.
Well, that's fantastic. And one other exciting thing, Jim and Fitz, that we're talking about doing as part of XG Productions, and that is launching some bonus content. here for best case, worst case listeners. So what we want to know, guys, you guys are so vocal on our Facebook page. So write us, let us know whether you'd be willing to subscribe for a very small fee to get bonus content from Jim, from me, from people like Fitz. For example, I know we have listeners out there who are begging for more linguistics from Fitz. I mean, it's true. They tell me that on Facebook all the time, Fitz. They're really eager to know even more about forensic linguistics. So if y'all want bonus content like that, write us, let us know whether that's something that you really want, and we're definitely considering it.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we have some really amazing super fans out there, and we would like to try to give them and everyone an opportunity to hear more from us and from the experts that we bring on the show.
Well, and Jim, I'll say two words: video recording.
Uh-oh. Dangerous. Very dangerous.
I'd have to really put on my eyebrows this time, Jim.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, something like that. I don't know. I might have to put on some eyebrows myself.
Oh, why take away from your bald head?
Well, wait, well, it's not totally bald, Fitz. I do have to shave it every week or so.
Oh, what a great way to end this episode.
All right. Well, again, Fitz, thanks so much for coming. And thank you, Francie. And until next time, to all our listeners, thank you for listening to Best Case, Worst Case. Signing off.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba. And hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness Delight can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D2L.org.